Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight we got Mark and Ian. Hey, hey, yo, yo, ho, ho, fee, fi, fo, fum. Let's go with that. Haven't heard that in a while. And we're going to talk about Road to Perdition, Tom Hanks, kind of flipping everybody on their edge, playing sort of an anti-hero, rough customer type. He wasn't just a nice guy in this. He whacked people. He was a brutal murderer, killer of women's and children's. No, he wasn't quite that far, but...
No, that was Daniel Craig.
Yeah, 007. Daniel Craig, the final on-camera role for Paul Newman. We're pretty sure, unless he did something that just
came... No, that was the final on-camera, and then I think Cars was
his final voice acting thing.
Yeah.
Based on a graphic novel, and I was picking up on it. I was definitely, as I was watching it, picking up on things that were very comic book-like in terms of the final action sequence, and one of the more vaguely cartoony kind of characterized villains.
Which was interesting about the gangsters, because they weren't...
The gangsters weren't really cartoony, but you did have the Jude Law hitman, which was... He had all the cartooniness. He had the gross teeth and the fingernails.
Creepy.
Yeah. He had all of that. So, start at the beginning. We've got Tom Hanks is Sullivan.
Alive.
Hmm?
Can't forget about Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, he's married to her in an inexplicable sort of role for her. Doesn't quite work. It doesn't not work, but it just seems...
It's a little off, but I...
Yeah, it worked. They got two kids. They're part of sort of an extended family of, I guess...
Irish mob.
Presumably Irish.
I'd say that was Irish.
I mean, yeah, but then later on you find out they're connected to Capone, and I guess Capone was Italian.
Well,
right?
They were all connected.
So they were all...
Capone was...
They were all scratching each other's backs, I guess.
Well, Capone was heavily involved with the Purple Gang of Detroit.
Oh, okay.
And they were all Jewish.
Well, you know, it does make sense that they would work together, but at the same time...
You know, think about... It made me think, going back to that, I was thinking about, and it's not... I can't remember his real name. But Jimmy Conway, Robert De Niro's character in Goodfellas, because we were talking about the whole Scorsese thing.
Yeah.
If he had directed the movie, The Difference. And that actual... And I... Fuck, what the hell is his name? I can't remember it right now, because I've only read a little bit about the guy. The actual gangster that Robert De Niro's character was based on. But he went, listening to Henry Hill talk about his history, he went all the way back to Murder Incorporated and the Irish Crews and everything, and he became so powerful, even though he wasn't, you know, a made guy in the Italian Mafia, because he did hits for all the Italian bosses, and he was just a go-around guy that everybody respected, because, for one, he was incredibly ruthless and dangerous, and... He always got the job done, but it was interesting, you know, the history there going all the way back, and it made me think about this movie of just a character like him starting out working for an organization like that, except for New York.
Hmm.
But yeah, they were all interconnected, and then of course there'd be wars.
Yep, go to the mattresses, as they say when they have the gang wars. So, yeah, you mentioned the director, or not the director, but you mentioned, we talked about, like, how different this maybe would have been, a different kind of movie if Scorsese had directed it or something. There was a camera movement. Sam Mendes directed this. This was his follow-up.
Lots of soft focus.
Follow-up to American Beauty. Which had plenty of interesting camera work, or, you know, some was good, some was a little hokey. I mean, American Beauty and this movie both share the same sort of over-the-top melodramatic moments that sometimes work, and I don't know, they don't work for me
anymore.
Chicago
was pretty cool.
Yeah, visually, this movie is really pretty top-notch. It's good camera work for the most part. A few movements and a few.
I would have liked to have seen it in Blu-ray. I was expecting it to be a little crisper.
Well, this was an upconverted DVD. Your DVD upconverted on my PS3. But it looked good, I thought. I mean, honestly,
it was passable.
The difference between a Blu-ray and an upconverted DVD, depending on the transfer quality of the Blu-ray, can be negligible. Not it isn't, but like in a good upconvert, but it can be kind of. So really, the plot is in about the first 40 minutes is the first act, which I mean, we'll get into sort of pacing issues and everything here in a second, and that sort of sets up the relationship between the son, the older son, and his father, where there kind of isn't really one. He's kind of,
Michael,
I guess,
and Mike.
Distant. Yeah, Michael and Mike. And basically the kid ends up stowing away in the car, and he sees his dad help take out some people, you know, some bootleggers or something. And that, from that point on, kind of knows what's, you know, is quickly made aware of the sort of world he's in. And the film makes an effort to try and make it seem like the Tom Hanks character doesn't want his son to be part of that world. Especially towards the end of the movie, it does a little more of a way, it sort of clarifies that a little better, though. The fact that he keeps his son with him for so long in the movie, and he pursues vengeance after his wife and son and younger son are killed.
Well, really, you'd have to.
You would, but you don't know. You wouldn't take your son into it, you know. Honestly, I mean, it would be a different movie and it would be a different story, but it just doesn't feel authentic to me that Hanks would. I mean, basically, once the first act is over, then it's like they're on the road, running, but mainly they're kind of. I mean, Hanks is taking a pretty proactive role towards seeking retribution to the people that sort of murdered part of his family, but he's dragging his son along all throughout this, and that's the part I had a little problem with, because it's like, if he doesn't want his son to be part of this world, then why is he dragging him into? Well, I don't know. There were multiple occasions he could have left him at a train station, and I mean, he basically had a location where he was going to go. They were going to go to perdition, and meet up with his aunt, and so he could have like put him on a train or put him on a bus somewhere, just anywhere, and just gotten rid of him. Or he could have, later on in the movie, when they kind of do the Western thing where they have him get all injured and need to recuperate, and they find this little nice couple at this old abandoned sort of farmhouse. It's not abandoned, but it's, you know, just an old farmhouse. He could have left him with that. He could have at least insisted on that. Like, you know, he could have left at night when the kid was still sleeping. Instead, he gets the kid. He's like, get up, we have to leave now. So, I mean, the kid becomes part of his thing, and then that kind of works into the whole angle of the father and the son getting to know each other and learning things about each other, kind of, sort of. There's a few scenes that are kind of stuffed in there to do that. Like, oh, yeah, in the quiet moments, it's like he's asking him about what subjects in school he wants to learn. And I don't know, the movie's kind of a mess. It's not really a major mess, though. For the most part, it works. It's just, it's a bit too melodramatic for my taste in some places. I don't dislike it, though. I like the movie, for the most part. It's just that it's 43 minutes before it really gets exciting. And a lot of that is just set up for people. You know, for characters and for interactions. A lot of that, I think, is maybe to make it so that you care a little more when, like, the younger brother is killed. I mean, killing a kid, that's a big deal. So you don't really need to even have done so much of that. But you give a little bit of the brother a little bit of character. But there's a lot of characters that are kind of given character almost in a wasteful way. That it just seems like it's just not as tight as it could be. I mean, and it's under 2 hours. It's about exactly 2 hours. It just feels a little long. And it's hard to kind of describe everything that happens in it. It could have moved a little faster, and or it could have been just as long, and they could have cut more out of the first act and done more in the second act to really reinforce the theme about the father and the son connecting and the father being so adamant about his son not turning out like him. Instead, they sort of just throw scenes in there where it's a lot of telling and not showing. It's like the father just says to his son, "I didn't want you to be like me." And
how would you show that exactly?
That's the tough part about writing, but I mean, they show it at the end. Is the thing, you know, they show at the end when the kid's about to basically kill somebody to save
him,
but he can't do it, and his dad doesn't really want him to do it. His dad's kind of got it under control, and he's kind of nodding like, don't do it, you don't need to do this, kind of. And so that's one way that they do it at the end that kind of works. That kind of saves it a little bit, though. That's, you know, then you throw in the Newman score and giant crescendos here and there, and that's a certain type of Hollywood big budget movie making and certain kinds of melodramatic films that, like I said, are not really my cup of tea necessarily. I mean, I like this. I like Shawshank Redemption to a degree.
So you think this movie should have had Chili Dog in it?
No, I didn't need Chili Dog from
Gamer,
but. Nothing like that. It didn't need to be like that. But okay, here you go. Let me give you an example of something that could have been cut in the first act.
Well, just one. What would the hipsters think?
What, the hipsters
think? I'm thinking they'd shit all over it.
They might just, but they might also love it because it's a graphic novel. And you know what? Let's just stop calling oversized comic books graphic novels.
Who liked Spirit?
I don't think anyone did.
See,
people might have ironically liked it. But, I mean, the reason, it's all execution. And I like to think about Spirit. I might even want to watch The Spirit again and see if there's an angle to take at it where it could maybe be a little bit, like, you know, like if it's just like it wasn't being read right by people that were watching it. I think to me it was just too, it wasn't too goofy, it was just too stupid in its goofiness.
It absolutely was too stupid.
And that's the problem, because it's... you have to take, in a weird way, doing certain material, you have to take it a certain degree of seriously, but then you can't wink too much. It just winked too much, and it was too aware of how
off the wall. Well, that's what I always thought the beauty of Raiders of the Lost Ark was.
Oh, well, yeah, those movies are great with that, because they're done real. I mean, adventure movies are different than, like, tongue-in-cheek.
If you're really going to be taken for a ride, then you're not... And you're not just making an out-and-out comedy. You have to... The audience has to believe.
Yeah, exactly.
For the movie to really have... To really be enjoyable and have an impact, you got to really think they're going after the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to pull off, because it's so ridiculous in the first place. But especially as a kid, I mean, you believe all that shit.
You do, but I mean, if you really think about what works about so great about Raiders, and this comes into the showing, not telling, and everything else too... Is that you don't? They don't open that box till the very end. All it is just a box. But what you have is you have potent stuff like Nazis wanting it, like Indy's relationship to Belloc, like the fact that that Marion is killed. It's all about the rugged individual American defeating the evil Nazis and the terrible French collaborator, arrogant prick. And you know, so it's like when he goes to get the Ark back from the Nazis right after they've just gotten free from the snake pit, and they're like, what are you going to do? And he's like, I don't know, I'm making this up as I go.
This is history.
And then he rides the horse, and the music gets all giant and stuff. Then you're like, well, yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, it's a total MacGuffin. It doesn't matter if it's real or if it's just a bunch of dust in a thing. It doesn't matter at all. It's like those guys are going to get it.
I love one of those trucks.
Yeah, those Nazi trucks were awesome. Anyway, back to Road to Perdition and sort of my issues with some pacing stuff and just a few... I mean, it's Mendy's style, maybe, that I just don't care for necessarily. And something like American Beauty, where it's got a little more humor... And so you can... That kind of tempers the melodrama a little better. Because it's kind of like, yeah, we take some of the stuff seriously, but we also get how dumb it is.
I have such a difficult time watching teenagers, especially very serious teenagers.
Oh, yeah, the precocious teenagers with their big words and stuff.
The big words, yeah. They're just so difficult to watch.
Did you like Ghost World?
Dragon. I did watch that.
Thor Birch, Scarlett Johansson.
I went through a Thor Birch phase. I feel for it. not as much anymore. I can kind of deal with it, but there would be certain moments on TV shows or movies that would just be so embarrassing to me that I'd have a hard time watching. And I just felt so much for Steve Buscemi's character.
Yeah, kind of being that overage nerd. But
that's kind of weird because I'm thinking about that, and that's a movie that I watched once, like 10 years, 12 years ago or whatever. And so I don't remember it very well. I just remember that. That's the one thing I really took away from it.
Yeah, I mean, that is...
I watched The Hole, too.
Okay.
Did you see that one?
The Hole?
The Hole. Again, with Thor Birch.
No, I did not.
It was a little conniving hussy.
Oh.
That where she engineers everybody's death.
She engineers it. She electioneers it.
With Keira Knightley.
Oh, that'd be a thing to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was going to say, an example of something that is wasted time in the first act of Road to Perdition is when Michael Sullivan goes to a speakeasy to get collect or let a guy know that he's late on his collection. There's this interaction with the bouncer about where he's like, yo, like clearly looking for work and blah blah blah. And I mean, a lot of that's just stuff he's saying while they're walking through the speakeasy to guess give you like, oh yeah, hey, reinforce, check it out, the 30s, the speakeasies and Prohibition.
Well, no, that's really just kind of a window into what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's how Rooney is making his money. Through gambling and prostitution and illegal liquor.
Yeah, I know. But it's also like that whole character's interaction, because the guy then just gets killed pretty much right after that.
Yeah.
And so you could have cut some of that out. You could have cut out that character, maybe, and just had him walk through all of that, and it could have been a lot quicker, and you would have just seen it and been like, you would have understood all of it.
Mike could have just walked in, pistols blazing.
Well, not to that degree, but... And, I mean...
Michael could have just whacked Daniel Craig from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, and some of the stuff with the wake at the beginning kind of didn't need to happen. I mean, it's all just a question of what...
But it all fits into the story.
It doesn't. It doesn't, because really...
How doesn't it?
Because really, the story is about Michael and Mike. And that doesn't really even start until 43 minutes into the movie. There's a little bit of them being sort of estranged and disconnected, but that isn't even really... I mean, they're surrounded by so many other people. I mean, like you said, there's the parallelism with Paul Newman and his son, Daniel Craig, who is sort of the chief antagonist in this. But it's structured... I mean, basically, the film is very complex in the way it's structured, because... Some of the motivations are murky, but then the villains and the antagonists that are coming after, you know, the hero are doing it in such a way that it's hard to gauge any sort of sense of danger or stakes at any given time. Like, it's not like they come full force after him once they start robbing banks and stealing money from Capone, which to me seems a little off. It's like, yeah, they hired one hitman, but it's not like they're basically just going to track him down and take him out, which... seems weird. And Daniel Craig is being hidden for his own protection. You never get any real like sense that Craig is doing anything to kind of do anything with that. And you never get a lot with the Newman character and the Craig. I mean, you get little bits of it. But I mean, so because of that, if all that stuff is not that important, which I'd be fine with, then do more with the son and the father interaction. And you could trim back on some of the other stuff and not try to make it so, like, prescient and, like, historically relevant. It's like, yeah, we all understand Prohibition and these guys are gangsters and whatever. We don't need to see the multiple scenes of Stanley Tucci on phones with people sort of working out, like, stressing the terrible bureaucracy of being a criminal. That's not as
interesting. I thought that part was fascinating because it's generally not portrayed that way.
It's because it's kind of boring. And because the movie's not about that. If the movie were like an American Gangster, which does that really well, I think. You know, American Gangster does that angle a lot better in terms of like the actual like business side of figuring stuff out to like create a crime empire and like well, I got to do this, and I've got to go here, and I've got to make a connection with these suppliers, and I've got to be, you know, agreeable with these, and then I've got these cops coming in.
Because they fear you.
Then yeah,
you
have exactly, exactly. And I've got to shoot this guy and then leave, you know, leave the jar right there, you know? And it's not that movie. It's not really a gangster movie per se. That's just like the spectacle and the setting for this father-son story. And I mean, that's the biggest problem why I say it's kind of messy, is because thematically that gets lost in some of this other stuff. But Road to Perdition is not about that.
It's not about that.
And so
I don't even know what the fuck it's about.
It's anymore. About the Father and the Son.
It's about the Holy Spirit.
It's just about the Father and the Son. Really, I mean, and, what and there's about the
Callahan. Parallel. Did we get to meet Callahan?
Callahan,
Father Callahan.
No, we never did. We knew he was on the take.
Yeah,
because that.
Because the wine.
Because he needed the wine. The I need the communion wine, so I'm on the take with the bootleggers. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's just. I guess I'm just a little disappointed. I mean, it's.
Yeah, well, I expected it to be.
Well, it's a different movie than I expected it to be.
What do you expect?
I think it's a little. I don't know. I thought it was going to be a lot more like. Henri and like the Paul Newman character was going to be a much more like evil, villainous, kind of like mean spirited, you know, that was all going to be revealed or something. And they didn't do that, which I kind of liked, but then they didn't do much more with him. He was kind of wasted in this movie.
It's like Daniel Craig's character, one, he has the jealousy of Mike, because you can tell Michael, even though he's not actually
the surrogate son, like, yeah.
He's the favorite. And then you also have the fact that he's in the shadow of his father.
Yeah.
And he's kind of he's a weasel.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it really just all makes sense to me in a certain...
It does, but there's not enough of that. I mean, like I said, I would have loved more with both the Daniel Craig and the Paul Newman characters, and I would have loved more with the Tom Hanks and his son character in that. And maybe a little less of some of the other stuff that happened. I mean, like I said, if they had gotten that first act done sooner and really gotten into what the problem is and what the conflict is in the story...
The first half of the movie... Or the first 10 minutes could have whacked mom and the kid, and then
they could have done the first hour 20. Of the
movie could have been them running off to Mexico, getting into adventures
and yes,
and sitting on a beach and be like, we got to get this shit
windsurfing,
done.
Windsurfing, yeah.
We got business to take care of.
And
go back there.
Kick on the new metal. Don't forget the new metal and the dual wielding.
Some Bon Jovi. Yeah.
Some Blaze of Glory.
And maybe a little Wanted Dead or Alive.
Dead or Alive.
On the steel horse.
Always on the steel horse.
Always on the steel horse.
They did. They rode steel horses into it. I mean, they had automobiles.
No, I mean... The velociraptors or
velocipedes.
Or
velocipedes. So, I mean, I'm not trying to rip on it hardcore. I'm just like... It'd be, like I said...
You might as well just take a big old steel dump.
No, but it's one of those, like... I said this in Inception. Most of the movies I'm even going to bother to watch... are going to be movies that are good enough to be nitpicky about and to mention things like this in. And so the movie is already, like, above a 2.5 or above a 2, generally, from the get-go. If I'm going to even bother to watch it, I got to at least think that it's going to be that good.
With the Tooch?
Yes, Dan,
that's half a star right there.
Yeah. Tucci gets a good one. The fact that kids get killed is big with me.
And they cuss.
And they cuss. I like that. Even though, I mean, like, honestly, I liked the littler kid better. They gave him more character at the beginning, and then they whack him. And I think what they're doing, and same with, like, the bouncer, is that they're sort of trying to do that, like, well, these are real people, and they have character, and so in a split second we'll give you a little hint of that, and then we'll kill them, and it will seem more potent. And they do some of that, but the movie is in a weird way... about its violence. It's a little graphic in a couple places, but then it really kind of holds back in others. And you mentioned, and you've got to maybe have an issue with this, the final sort of big revenge release is done in such a matter-of-fact way that maybe that's sort of part of the point or part of the theme. But it also is not cinematically very effective.
The one thing that I did like about it is the fact that there weren't any words. He didn't, you know...
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine.
He just walked up to him and bang.
That's fine, but it was, like, all done with, like, his back to the camera, and then, like, something you didn't see. It happened off screen, and then you get kind of a weird, kind of hokey, awkward view of it through a mirror. I mean, it didn't have any potency. Yeah, thinking, and a movie like this...
American Beauty did the same thing. You didn't see Kevin Spacey getting shot.
Yeah, I know, but it also like did slow-mos and things falling over and shit. And in that movie, I would probably consider it sort of a not necessarily a flaw, but especially in this movie where it's all about those interactions and it's about that sort of those sort of moments of like life or death and mortality and decisions that people make about to take people's lives and things. It's all very. It's just. It didn't. It wasn't what I wanted that ending to be. And it's not. But it's close. Like you said, I wanted. No words is fine. Even the fact that like the guys are opening the doors for him, kind of still works. It makes sense. Not everything makes sense though. But whatever. It's definitely doing the whole like it's very audience manipulative. But that's a big melodramatic Hollywood movie for you. You get the guys with the big sweeping scores that tell you, like, okay, now be sad while he, drifts off into death and, the big strings and all that other stuff. I mean, I don't know. I just personally don't like that kind of stuff. Those are my tastes. I mean, at a certain point, you have to just cop to that and say, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not my thing. But honestly, I would give this movie, Road to Perdition, like a 3.5 out of 5, because setting, I like the style. What
about John Williams? Star Wars.
Oh, but those are different movies. Star Wars are, like you said, Indiana Jones. We talked about that with the movie music sweeping.
They're adventure movies.
They're adventure movies, and there's a different sensibility to them. Melodramas take things, like an adventure movie can be serious and action-inspired and fun, but it's not saying, like,
well, how about, like, okay, so...
It pulls on different strings.
Lawrence of Arabia would be sort of the same idea.
Lawrence of Arabia gets... Yeah, Lawrence of Arabia is definitely that, but Lawrence of Arabia, like, parses it out in a way that I think is just much more effective. Like, Lawrence of Arabia has awesome just shots with music, and those are, like, iconic, and those just set the stage. And then it kind of has, like, just good scenes that they let play out. I think a lot of times these days, especially in the big Hollywood movies, there's this tendency to use music to tell again. To tell you how to now be sad, now be funny, now this is the goofy part, now this is this. And it's just, sometimes, like, it's just cranked up too much. Like I mentioned jokingly... I mentioned jokingly at the beginning of this where there was a lot of sort of Irishy sounding type of music or instruments being used, and it's like, oh, they must be an Irish mob, so that's how they're telling us that they're an Irish mob, is that they're using, Irishy sounding music in the score. And I don't know, as a guy that reviews movies professionally on this podcast for three plus years, and a guy that's, done just enough in movies, I look at the decisions that are being made in terms of putting a movie together and what I see in the final product, and that's what I'm critical of.
Well, you're looking at making movies for yourself and your ilk versus making movies for a wider audience.
I'm understanding all of those things, but I'm saying, at the same time, I'm saying that an audience gets it. An audience will get enough, and you can find more clever ways to do things.
I don't know who all these people are that you're speaking of, because I haven't met them.
You're saying that, like, really stupid people are...
Really stupid people watch movies.
I know they do. But will they watch Road to Perdition? Maybe they will if the score is enough craziness. I mean...
If there's enough blood.
I don't know. You're right. Some of it is taste things, and some of it is just, like, a nuanced thing. And I mean, hell, I'm also not big on scores, but I like some scores every now and again. That something will work for me. The Commando score by James Horner with the Caribbean drums is awesome. You can't go wrong with that. It was then kind of cannibalized and reused for 48 Hours. Or 48 Hours was before Commando? I don't know, whatever.
48 Hours was way before Commando.
Possibly,
Commando
yeah.
was like, what, 87?
That's true.
48 Hours was like 82.
Okay, good point. Wow. Well, he really just went back to it. He just
Zing.
Like... He just took his extra Calypso music from... Or Caribbean drums.
Did he entwine any of that in the Titanic?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I did. That's another melodramatic movie that I had issues with. Is it's just... I mean, and this movie... And this is the reason I'm giving Road to Perdition a pretty decent grading. A 3.5 out of 5 is pretty good. is because one thing it doesn't do that a lot of melodramas do, and like you talk about, like, you know, well, who are you making a movie for? You're making it for stupid people and stuff. Is it gives you characters that have a little more interest to them. And it could just be you got solid actors like Daniel Craig and Jude Law and Tom Hanks and Paul Newman doing and the roles. Tooch. And you have Tooch, and that works. You're and not
Sarah Rand or whatever.
You get a handful of just people talking about things and saying, like I said, saying instead of showing. And sometimes you have to do that, and you're right. And in a lot of places, it's probably fine and necessary to have had them do that. It just feels like it's just a pacing issue in terms of when those things happen. They feel like they just happen out of nowhere. They happen just to get that part done so they can move to the next thing. So, but like, why don't we give you a chance to get a little in on this movie here? Or at least give it a rating. I don't know, whatever.
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
So same as me, say?
I'll give it
3 3/4 stars again?
3 3/5.
Oh, wow.
Woo.
He didn't get to have his honey-dipped fried chicken.
No, he
law.
Didn't.
He had to bail.
He should have. If I were him, I would have eaten my chicken.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Is it? I don't know. That would have been a more interesting hit.
Could have waited until everyone was gone and then just whacked the waitress. And then taking a picture of her. That's what it was. He needed to take a picture of something. He had the film.
I guess,
and the camera. He was ready to go.
But he was like...
Somebody had to die.
He was like making a living doing that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like the man...
professionally.
You don't get between a man and his bread.
And his passion.
His passion. He had a lot of passion.
He did.
I just saw it. Just see how he treated that whore. That whore.
He didn't do anything bad to her, did he?
No, he...
He just gave her some money.
He just...
And she was on her way.
He just, you know, leveled her with his charm.
Yeah.
Especially, I like the little finger
the
thing.
The messed up fingernails and everything, yeah. Now, I mean, yeah.
And the wife, well, it was like a 30s, early 30s wife beater equivalent.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Road to Perdition is one to check out.
I liked him better when his face was all fucked up.
Well, yeah, that was the comic book angle. Sorry, graphic novel, but I'm not going to call it a graphic novel. That's the thing. See, the hipsters want to say they read graphic novels because they don't want to cop to the fact that they just read comic books. Like, well, these are different, you know? They're not like the underwear pervert comic books. They're the actual...
Underwear pervert?
Well, that's what hipsters call superhero adventures.
Comics. Oh, I don't get it.
You don't get it?
No.
Because usually their outfits look like they wear their underwear outside of their pants.
That's for freedom of movement. And it's just an artistic thing.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it needs to be justified.
Have loincloths.
The point is you don't justify it because you don't ever get into a fight trying to justify things with hipsters.
You don't?
No, you just dismiss them outright.
You can't just start cramming bread down their throats? That'd be a lot of fun.
No, you just dismiss them outright.
And put a little kraut on there for them?
Kraut? Sauerkraut on bread?
And then you hit him with the hot poker.
You're regular Daniel Craig from Road to Perdition here, aren't you?
You'd have to get something to really get the leverage so that you gotta just cram it down.
You would.
Like to make a movie about a guy falling downstairs.
Just clunk, 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 called Slinky the Human Movie. What? What?
Wow.
The human movie about the slinky.
Imagine it more like a cartwheel.
That could be a way for it. Anyway, yeah, so
and
I
guess it's just these windows through time that he keeps flying through. You know, the stairs is just like one dimension after another.
Oh my gosh. It's terrible.
And there's just these amazing scenes that he's cartwheeling through.
He's in limbo.
And he gets odd and he shits himself once in a while until he's out of shit.
Of course.
And
dehydrates and dies.
Yeah, eventually he's just dead cartwheeling.
Terrible.
And eventually some like mosquito type creature just eats him.
You've definitely got something there. That does sound a lot like a limbo.
Could I sell it to the Sci-Fi Channel?
I think so. Or sell it to Xbox Live and have them turn it into a video game.
Or will I have to come up with some monster villain?
No, you got the mosquito already.
Like Super Croc.
Or Sharktopus.
Sharktopus.
That's the newest one from Roger Corman, Eric Roberts.